Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, more, what do I call it? Horsepower. I think that's the word I want to use. Big guns, lots of high credibility people I've enjoyed having on the program, and I'm getting my share of doctors and PhDs and folks that are really, really smart about stuff, and I'm glad to share them with you, and our guest today is no exception. Dr. Kathleen Paris is with me on the program. She's an author, she is a consultant, and she's written the book, Staying Healthy in a Sick Organization or in Organizations, The Clover Practice. And we're going to be talking about that book, but also some real practical things for people working at a company that maybe is not the best place and how you can maintain your integrity and honor and still do the job and also know when it's time to leave. So how's that for a setup, Dr. Paris?
It's perfect. Thanks so much, Dave.
Well, I'm really glad you're on the program and been looking forward to this. So, you know, I know you've got a lot in the book that people can get a hold of by going to your website, the KathleenParis.com website, traditional spelling. But let's help them where they are. You know, somebody's out there, they are, you know, working for a company that maybe the company, quote unquote, maybe isn't doing the right things, or maybe they have coworkers that aren't behaving properly, or they find themselves in a, what you call a quote unquote, sick organization. Let's talk about what a sick organization looks like or feels like for the employee, and then what somebody can do about it.
Okay. Well, all organizations probably could do better in some area. So nobody's perfect, and I hope that that comes through in our discussion, is that we're not looking for perfection here. But an unhealthy organization is one where, for instance, the information doesn't flow freely. People really don't know what's going on, and they have to kind of rely on the grapevine. That's very unhealthy. Where people don't have feedback on how they're doing. Where there aren't processes, if there are problems, there aren't processes for doing things. People hold grudges for many years and keep replaying the same stories over and over again. You can kind of recognize how that would feel. Obviously, in that kind of environment, you're not going to have good production. You're not going to have people being as successful of an organization as they might be. So that's what, when I talk about a sick organization, I kind of make it dramatic, but it's really an organization that is not producing what it could or not as successful as it could.
So it may be a profitable company. They may be successful. They may be, you know, kind of quote unquote, highly regarded in the business community. They privately held, publicly traded. They may give to charities. They may do a lot of things, but in the actual work environment or the internal might not be so good.
It's very possible. And, you know, everybody has, everybody's different. We know this. And everybody has more or less capacity or ability to deal with certain kinds of situations. So really what it boils down to is this the right place for me? There may be other people who are not as fazed by it as another person might be. But I tell people, don't wait for the company to shape up or for other people to act right or to get better. Take control of what you can control, which is yourself.
That's so true, because, you know, it's always about, you know, how we respond to things that defined our experience, not, you know, people are going to be what they're going to be. Businesses or companies are going to be what they are. And it's, again, I know it's a very commonly said thing, but how we respond to events or situations is really, that's going to be our experience.
That is. Yep.
Very interesting.
I wrote the book because when I was first a leader, I thought I had to be perfect. And it was very hard for me to admit I had made a mistake or say I didn't know how to do something. And I had kind of this fake perfection, or I thought I did. And I came to realize that the best thing that I could do as a person working in an organization or leading other people was to be authentic and to tell the truth. And that's how the first leaf of the clover practice came about.
That's really good, because that's really the authenticity is what a lot of people, they kind of get past it, or they don't pay enough attention to that. Mm-hmm. And I really like that word, because it's, I try to do that when I work with, you know, work with my employees, even the way I say that, you know, where we all work together. And I've got, at the time of this radio program, I have 12 people, and I may be hiring more people to help me, but it's a work with. It's, you know, I don't want to be that corner office that inaccessible and, you know, stuffy. And I know other businesses that work that way, but that's not the way I want to do it.
Yeah. And really the leader sets the pace for the rest of the organization. So that's wonderful. I just saw, Dave, some figures that 82% of people, this is throughout the world, a study of about 30,000 employees, 82% of them don't trust their boss.
That's a high number.
Isn't that? It's just startling.
Well, and, I want to take a quick break, Dr. Parrish. When we come back, though, I'm sure you have advice not only for the employee about how they can deal with the reality of not trusting their boss 8 out of 10, but also for the bosses, how they can fix that. So let's do this. Just joining us, ladies and gentlemen, Kathleen Parrish is our guest, and the website is by the same name, KathleenParrish.com, and the book is Staying Healthy in a Sick Organization, The Clover Practice. Stay tuned.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Parrish is joining us to talk about her book, The Clover Practice, and also, you know, many practical things you can do to deal with a difficult work environment. I want to go back to the title of your book. So tell me what the Clover Practice means.
Well, it's a touchstone that you can use no matter what situation you're in. I use it myself every day, really. It's like a clover. It has three parts to it. The first one is to tell the truth always. Even if you don't look good, even if it's not convenient. And I know that's easy to say, it is hard to do, but it is the difference between being healthy and happy and being afraid and feeling threatened.
What if it's going to really hurt somebody's feelings?
Well, that's where the second part of the Clover Practice comes in, is it matters how you tell the truth. And so the second leaf is speak for yourself, which is to talk about things from your own perspective and how you perceive them, realizing that everybody has a different reality.
And say that, right? I mean, and say, well, look, this may not be your reality, but this is the way it seems to me, you know?
So if you talk about it from your reality, you're saying to someone, I expected this would be done, or I understood that we were going to meet this afternoon, or when we talked about this, this was what I thought we agreed to. That is really different than, you didn't do this.
Right.
Or you don't get it, or you don't support me, or you're not a team player. You know, as soon as you start calling people names like uncooperative, unprofessional, they turn off. But if you can speak for yourself and say, this is what I see, and that this is what I'm hoping we can do about it, it's a whole different dialogue with somebody. And you can also say, I just don't want to weigh in on that. You know, I think that's fair. You know, if somebody puts you in a corner, I think you can say, you know, I just don't want to get into this area. It's not going to help our relationship, and let's talk about something else. I think that's okay, but that is very, I think that's very rare that one would have to do that, because you always, you know, somebody says, do these jeans make my butt look fat? Well, you can say, I thought the other ones looked better. Tell you the
there
truth.
There you go.
And you're the person that they're going to go to when they have a question.
All right, time for a personal story. My wife always asks me about her clothes and say, you know, do you like this? Do you like that? I'm trying to figure out what shirt to wear. And often that'll happen early in the morning when we're trying to get out the door. And we have this arrangement where I say, okay, standard caveats apply. In other words, I wouldn't have your wardrobe. I would wear different stuff. I wouldn't have that. I would have, my stuff would be a little more flamboyant maybe, or a little bit, you know, and so I always say to her, standard caveats apply. Yes, I would wear that.
Yeah, so you're speaking for yourself. That's
exactly.
Perfect. That's a perfect example of it. Because it's not, we think that our opinion is the eternal truth.
Right.
And, you know, it's not. It's just our view of based on what we know and what we've experienced.
And we've all experienced things so differently that have formed our world perspective.
Absolutely. And I think we know that intellectually, but if we are mad or upset, we forget that we're wearing our own pair of glasses and that there's probably more than one reality going on.
Well, there most certainly is. And I think that for a lot of people, that reality is that environment that you speak to that is a sick organization. For somebody to be able to respond, to be able to say, okay, I'm going to grab onto my clover here and say, okay, number one, I'm going to tell the truth. Number two, I'm going to be obviously very aware of how I tell it. Those are things that can really help, because there's going to be plenty of situations in a work environment where people are put in an awkward position.
Yeah.
And then number three.
That one is declare your interdependence. And this is the hardest one for us as Americans because we are very independent and our thinking is very independent, and yet we are so dependent on each other. You know, you think about air pollution goes across the ocean to other countries, and companies and organizations, schools, colleges, hospitals, they all depend on each other to be successful, and yet the way we're organized kind of in silos, it's hard to see that sometimes. But if we really got it that I'm not going to succeed unless the guy down the hall succeeds, we would do things differently. If we really, at a deep level, felt like my fate is intertwined with the people down the hall in accounting or whatever it may be, we would communicate more, we would involve people more, and when we're planning things, we would be more appreciative. We would just pay more attention.
Well, but the part there, Dr. Paris, I want to really get to. Lisa's telling me we're up against a break. When we come back, though, what I'd like you to help me understand is the declaring it part, because I think mm-hmm. that's a real important part of this process. So stay right there, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have Dr. Kathleen Paris on the line with us. She's written the book, Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, The Clover Practice, which we are walking through, and her website is kathleenparis.com. So before the break, I mentioned the kind of the part that catches my attention, Dr. Paris, is the declaration mm-hmm. aspect of this. And so let's talk about the importance of that. Is that kind of a, look, I'm depending on you, so you're depending on me. It's that, I guess, that declaration as mm-hmm. as a part of the organization. What are we trying to accomplish, the mm-hmm. declaration part?
Well, actually, you've understood it in a whole deeper way than I actually wrote it. When I wrote it, it was kind of like a play on words, like the Declaration of Independence. This is the Declaration of Interdependence. But what you've brought up is really an excellent point, because we need to be talking within our own work groups about, if we decide to do this, how's this going to affect those other people in that other office, you know, what are the unintended consequences to this other part of the organization, or our customers, or our suppliers? So the declare part, it being very intentional about realizing that we do not operate our little office here in a vacuum, but that every single decision we make is like a little pebble thrown. It has rings that go out and out and out, and not that you can control all that, but to think about it up front makes hugely better decisions.
Well, and I think it takes it even further than the old, you know, the old adage that your job in an organization is, if you have a supervisor, is to make that supervisor look really good. That's your job. Mm-hmm. You know, I cut my teeth in the financial world as an auditor for one of the big six accounting firms, and that was really clear. I knew my job was mm-hmm. to do what that supervisor told me. You know, you had it's very hierarchical in big mm-hmm. accounting firms, and you know, that's the job, but you're taking it further by saying, look, you know, we're all in this together, so to speak, but it's that mutual dependence. If you mm-hmm. do a good job, the supervisor's going to look good. If you don't, you know, obviously it's going to reflect on yourself as well as them.
Yeah. And, you know, you see a lot of sabotage in organizations. The unhealthier they are, the more you'll see people sabotaging each other, not realizing that they're doing it to themselves. You know, what you do to someone else in your organization in terms of holding back information or making it harder for them to get their work done just because you're mad at them, it comes back to you. And sometimes it's hard to see that. But ultimately, we're all in this web of interdependency.
Well, and with the interdependency, you know, in communicating that, I would think, and again, I've not been an employee for 16 years, but I would think that there's a strengthening of the way the company sees your value if you are, you know, kind of saying, look, I mm-hmm. want to be here and I want you to want me to be here. And it's almost like you create a different kind of mm-hmm. relationship in communicating this.
Yes, I really appreciate you framing it that way, because being that intentional and explicit about it, I think is very powerful.
Well, and I think people are very reluctant to do that because, number one, they don't want to take the risk Number two, they feel like they're being, maybe even feel like they're being a little corny, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, they feel like they're being a little too touchy-feely. But I guess I'm asking you if it's okay for somebody to be quite that declarative and say, look, I love being here. I love this job, or I love the things I get to do. And, you know, we're all in this together. How can I communicate or do things more? You know, it's just that mm-hmm. in that vein. And I, you know, if I had one, I mean, I'll tell everyone an employee I have, you know, people that communicate with me and running and having a business, they're telling me they're all in.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, there's the proof for you. People appreciate it. And really, it's an illusion to think that we're not. We're just, it's delusional to think that we're not all connected and our success is interdependent. So you're simply taking what exists and people appreciate that.
And I think that will also help the leaders in a business address, or it's a real quick remedy, or it's certainly an invitation for the problem of no feedback that you talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That if you've got these kind mm-hmm. of, you know, if you declare independence, then and there's no feedback back after that,
yeah.
Then I think you're now you've got one of the organizations that you would say, hey, look, this is not the place for you.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that
and
fair?
You know, it is very fair. And I noticed that you talked about you had a job where your job was to make your boss look good, and you haven't done that for 16 years. So it says you found something that matched your needs, desires, aspirations much better. You didn't stay stuck, and a lot of people do stay stuck.
Well, and I, you know, I have that entrepreneurial component that needed to be fulfilled, or I was mm-hmm. going to go insane.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a matter of, okay, either I walk the plank and walk away from the salary and start my own business, or I could stay and but never be what I thought I could be and
yes.
what I could accomplish.
Yes. I find it heartbreaking that people stay in jobs that are literally killing them because they are fearful.
And you know what I'll say as a business owner to those people is it isn't just stay or go. It's mm-hmm. also saying being willing to, you know, if you really feel like you got to stay or go and you're thinking about going, then speak up and say, look, you know, are there other things that I can do within the organization to use skills, or are there additional skills I could get or training I could get that could help me, you know, do more and make a larger contribution mm-hmm. or a new contribution another way? And a business owner is going to love that because that's initiative.
Yes, yes. And the cultures within an organization can be vastly different. You can have a horrible manager in a horrible department in the same company as you have heaven and somebody who really knows how to motivate and incentivize people. So I love your idea of sort of blooming where you're planted, looking around in your same organization for something different to do.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Kathleen Paris is with us. She's an author. She is a consultant. She's written the book, Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, The Clover Practice. We're going to take one more quick break and we'll be right back.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Kathleen Paris has been our guest today. KathleenParis.com. You can find the book and a lot of other good information there. You know, one of the other things I saw that you talked about in your book, Dr. Paris, is, you know, when we talk about, you know, the three pieces of the Clover Practice, telling the truth, how you tell it, being careful how you tell it, and declaring your interdependence. One of the other things you talk about is doing your emotional homework. Now, what does that mean? Let's talk about practical aspects of that.
Well, it's really being aware of coping mechanisms that you've developed through your life, going back to when we were children, that may not serve us well as adults.
Mm.
And everybody has these things. Nobody gets through childhood unfazed. I mean, at the very least, it's a constant state of going from one developmental stage to another. So there's always some loss in that process, or you know, losing the carefree days when you were a child, if that's the kind of childhood you had. Some people had horrific experiences growing up, and the coping mechanisms that they've developed, whatever they may be, they're probably subconscious, but they may not really serve a person very well in the workplace.
You're talking about maybe even avoidance behavior or self-sabotage,
yep,
or you know,
exactly,
a variety of different strategies to cope that, you know, they don't recognize what I do, and I do a good job, so therefore I'll sabotage my own performance, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give them what they expect.
Yeah, that is a very common pattern. Mm. And they're operating usually below the level of awareness. And so just thinking about some of the things that you did when you were a kid to get by, to survive whatever scenario you were faced with, and then saying, gosh, I wonder if I do that now. Do I overwork? You know, do I take on more responsibility that anyone should humanly take on because I had a parent or a parent who were so demanding?
An overachieving aspect of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To the point where you may be hurting yourself. And it manifests itself in all different ways. I mean, some people have depression, alcohol and drug problems. There's just a whole range of things, but asking yourself that question and then getting some help if you think, gosh, I do sabotage myself, or I do clam up when I want to speak, or I never really advocate for myself because it was always too scary to do that. Then get some help, and there's lots of help out there. There's bibliotherapy, there's groups, there's employee assistance programs, there are courses. You don't have to suffer anymore if you want to find a better way to do things.
It's not going to, as often is said, Dr. Paris, it's not going to take care of itself.
No.
Not like one day you're going to wake up and it's going to be heaven, as you describe it. There's going to be ongoing challenges unless you address the root issues.
Mm-hmm. And they like to bounce back, too. I mean, you may think, boy, I've got this overwork thing under control, and then find yourself on Christmas Eve, you know, working in the office. I think it's a life challenge. I really do.
Well, I think most good employers also, you know, I look at it from my perspective. I don't want an overworked employee. I want somebody mm-hmm. who is able to maintain balance and be here for the long term.
Yeah. How fabulous that you've articulated that and that they know that you want them to be balanced.
Yeah, because an exhausted employee is going to be not happy and is going to make mistakes.
And also make other people unhappy if the other people aren't working as hard as they are in their view.
We don't want that. Well, if you're just joining us, we've had Dr. Kathleen Paris on the line with us today. Dr. Paris, we're out of time. Thank you very, very much for being on the program. The website is kathleenparis.com, and the book is Staying Healthy in Sick Organizations, The Clover Practice. Thank you, Dr. Paris.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.